Hello, and welcome to the Charity Times Leadership Podcast, where we speak to leaders from across the sector about trends, challenges, and success stories. My name is Lauren Weymouth. I'm the editor of Charity Times, and I'll be bringing you a series of charity leadership podcasts designed to inspire you as you navigate your way through the year ahead. Today, we're going to be delving into the issue of banking for charities and the problems that exist within the relationship between the third sector and UK banks. Last year, the Charity Commission wrote a letter to chief executives of UK banks, warning that many, as they quoted, hard-pressed charities were experiencing significant issues, such as having accounts closed or suspended suddenly for long periods of time, a reduction in bespoke banking services, and poor customer service and administrative delays. The regulator argues that banking is not designed to match the way that charities operate, and so they called on CEOs of major banks to work harder to ensure that banking is made easier for charities to help provide a vital lifeline amid a challenging line of work. Joining me today is Mark O'Sullivan and Daniel Goodwin from IPT Africa, the cross-border payment solutions company. The duo agree that there's a lot of work to do to ensure that better relationships exist between finance and the third sector. And so today we're here to talk a little bit more about this in a bit more detail and the root causes of some of these issues. So welcome, Mark.
Hi, Lauren.
And welcome, Dan.
Hi, Lauren. Thanks for having us.
Thank you both so much for joining me today. We've got quite a complex issue to get through, but I think that it's one that will really shed some light on the way that the third sector currently exists with UK banks and the challenges that do exist there. Just before we dive into the topic in a little bit more detail, for our listeners' reference, can you explain a little bit about what IPT Africa is and a little bit about how you both met and how you came into this line of work?
Hi, Lauren. Well, let me tell you a little bit about my career. Sadly, it's always been spent in payments, starting way back in the 90s, working in the City of London. And then in 2011, an opportunity arose that took me to Mauritius. And with a young family, it just seemed like a risk worth taking. And 13 years later, I'm still here. In 2017, I founded IPT Africa. Coming from a payments background, I saw an opportunity to work with global corporations and NGOs, providing payment technology that supported their in-country operations across the African continent. IPT Africa really understands the complexities NGOs face when making payments into Africa, you know, which let's face it, is not easy. We have strong banking relationships and we can actually support in real time their in-country operations, allowing quick credit of funds and when situations arrive, quickly resolving them. How did I meet Dan is quite simple. Dan worked at our UK banking partner, and we shared a common vision that we kept speaking about. The UK's charity sector needed a reliable payment company which they could trust and build a partnership with. So I asked Dan, if not now, when? He jumped ship and he's joined our team driving our UK expansion, something we're really excited about.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Indeed we are. So yeah, just to give you a bit of background as to where I came from. So I arrived back in the finance sector in 2013, taking up a role at Western Union Business Solutions as an account manager for small, medium enterprise business portfolio. So UK importers and exporters who were making and receiving overseas payments. But fast forward to 2017, I found myself managing an INGO portfolio made up of charities of all shapes and sizes. And for the next 5 years, I worked on bank-to-bank and cash delivery projects in places like Syria, Afghanistan, Myanmar, Iraq, and Ukraine. And in 2022, I made the move to Crown Agents Bank to work on their international development team, which is when I first connected with Mark. And like you said, we shared some thoughts around the UK INGO market and how underserved we felt it was, which prompted me to, as Mark put it, to jump ship to IPT Africa in September of last year to help drive that mutual vision that Mark mentioned. So we know there's a significant number of problems that exist between the banking and charity sectors. And what we're trying to achieve at IPT Africa is built on a fairly simple premise. So delivering aid funding for critical missions needs reliable partners. So it's reliability, essentially. And that's what we're looking to build, because if we've learned anything from the last 5 months of engaging with the UK charity sector, is that this is what charities need from finance, along with a unique level of customer care, especially in the context of international payments.
I mean, it is absolutely the case, isn't it? You know, the fact that charities really need this constant reliability, and that is something that does often lack in the corporate world. Charities, you know, they're often left with quite quite inconsistent levels of service, which just doesn't really work for the model that the third sector operates in. So, you know, you stated there that there are quite a lot of problems that exist between the two sectors. And so as two people who have obviously worked in the industry for many years in international finance, namely the payments and the FX aspects, what do you think the biggest problems actually are?
I mean, yeah, that's a great question, Lauren. I mean, we've touched on two of those aspects already. One's reliability and one's customer care. And they seem to be common themes in various charity sector media publications too. Very well covered, very well publicized for a number of years now. So what we'll do is we'll have a look at two articles from 2018 and 2023. So a charity finance group study from 2018 detailed a survey that found that 79% of the 34 charities surveyed faced some kind of difficulty in accessing or using mainstream banking channels, which is fairly alarming. But if we dig a little bit deeper into the survey responses, and it doesn't read any better, with 41% explaining that they had transfers delayed by a correspondent bank, 20% had transfers denied by a correspondent bank, and 15% had delays in opening bank accounts. So access to, you know, core banking products. This was 5 years ago. So surely things have improved with the development of, like, you know, new technologies, which is driven by like a heightened need for banking efficiencies, because we have this, what feels like continued emergence of one overseas crisis after another, right? Now, not according to Civil Society's June 2023 article, which details the Charity Commission's growing sense of worry about banking services, whilst outlining that individual banks need to step up their levels of customer service and better understand the nuances and diversity within the charity sector.
And it actually seems, Lauren, that nothing is improving. So I think it's a great opportunity for some time for self-reflection from our sector, the banking and payments industry. You know, we know there are many problems, as Dan has mentioned, and there are actually, you know, a myriad of underlying reasons for them. So I'm just going to kind of, you know, touch on a few things really that I'm sure your listeners will kind of resonate with. You know, the constant themes are de-risking. And essentially what that means is a financial institution, it might be a bank, it might be a payment company, decide that they don't want to service a certain region, a certain sector, or actually an individual charity. And at very short notice, you know, that charity can find itself outside of the banking network. And obviously that's not ideal. And that kind of dovetails into, you know, a lack of specialist support for charities. Technology is improving all the time. And sometimes charities can't keep up with it. And there's not that gap where financial institutions actually support the charities with the technology that they're delivering and they're unveiling to the rest of their customers. So there is that kind of disconnect with new technology and the capability of charities to access it. And also there's the actual just basic misunderstanding of what the charity sector is looking for, you know, from a payment partner or from a bank. And charities can sometimes get missold or approach to take on products that aren't actually suitable for them. A classic one would be what we call hedging, which is essentially buying a currency now, but it's going to be delivered in the future. So you kind of cut out the currency volatility. And for most charities, it's just a completely unsuitable product to offer them. You know, if anything, it actually makes them more risky. You know, they can find that they're raising funds that become a lot less valuable when they just distribute them in 12 months time. And we've actually covered that on our website. We write a monthly post really trying to demystify our industry. And we talk about hedging and how unsuitable it is for charities. And it's actually a lazy way for the finance sector to try and connect with charities. But Dan and I, obviously, we are acknowledging there is this gap, and we're probably one of the first companies to actually do that. But it is actually broadly across the sector. It's not really just a remote issue. It's a big issue amongst the sector. And I think as we go through the podcast, you'll see that these issues are actually really broadening the relationship between charities and financial institutions. I think charities don't trust financial institutions. And I think financial institutions aren't doing enough to educate charities, you know, and what it is they actually need.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a bit of a catch-22 situation, isn't it, really? The kind of constant circle between charities and banks and this lack of trust that exists between the two. If we kind of dig into it in a bit more detail and a little bit deeper here, what would you say are the root causes of these issues? And more importantly, I suppose, why don't the issues seem to be changing? You know, what's the problem there?
Yeah, I think there's again, we've hit on a few issues. I think, you know, overridingly is obviously the charity and the INGO sector is obviously a very niche sector. So once you become niche, you do need a kind of different set of gloves to deal with it. And traditionally, banks just aren't really interested. You know, they're digitalizing, they're moving away from the human touch, where when the sector actually needs a human touch. So, you know, if we kind of dig a little bit deeper, and look at the payment industry, really, you can see how they service other sectors and why that kind of fits their model a lot easier and less risky. So, you know, traditionally payment providers and banks will focus in the UK, for example, on SMEs and corporates, you know, importing and exporting. That's a huge market. Now, that's a global market with a fairly low risk profile. You're either importing or you're exporting, and that could be, you know, importing from China or exporting to the US, Australia, Canada. It's day-to-day business, you know, that drives global trade, and it's very low risk or fairly risk averse for banks and payment companies. But then once you move into the realms of charities and INGOs, you know, of course, traditionally, they're going to be working in high-risk jurisdictions, and they're going to be wanting to buy and pay and send fairly liquid currencies. You know, take Africa, for example, you know, a bank will be much more comfortable sending euros or US dollars than maybe buying Zambian kwacha and sending that into Zambia. You then run into anti-money laundering questions. So it's much easier to categorize charities as high risk. Now, one size fits all high risk sector, which isn't always true. And it's not really getting any easier. You know, payments are continually being held in these high risk jurisdictions. And again, it comes back to the education piece. Charities don't realize why their payments are being held. It could be that more information is needed, which the financial institution should be able to provide. But this also creates delays. And of course, in the sector, payments are very time sensitive. You know, it's emergency aid relief, natural disaster, conflict response. So these payments need to get to the destination, you know, within 24 hours. And we're just not seeing that. We're seeing long, long, long delays. And the normal operating model of a bank or a payment institution, because they service so many different sectors, is they'll normally have a 4 to 5 day window before they'll even put a trace on a lost payment. They want time for the payment to reach the destination. And it doesn't really work in the sector. You know, as we keep saying, these are time sensitive payments. So it's a lot, as you mentioned, it's a kind of it goes full circle. So you have this business model that banks and payment companies operate, where they try to service low risk and high risk sectors with the same service levels. And it clearly doesn't work. And again, profitability, you know, charities traditionally aren't that profitable for organizations. So you have a sector that needs a lot of care, a lot of oversight, and potentially not that great return. So they're just kind of sidelined. And that is one of the major issues that we really see. And what you will see also is, in the world we live in today, as payments are getting sent around the world, there's a lot of due diligence and compliance checks that have to go with it. And if the charities aren't educated about what they need to put on that payment, it will get delayed. And it causes frustrations within the charities. And we've spoken to charities that basically become a de facto payment company. They're trying to sort out their own problems. They're left to sort out their own problems, which is not ideal. And it really is a sad, sad indictment, I suppose, of our sector, that charities just aren't a priority. You know, there's a lot of effort that goes into them. And it's much easier for banks and payment companies to service what we would call their everyday business as usual customers, the customers at a low risk, cause them very little headaches, and give them the largest financial return.
Yeah, I think Mark makes a good point there about business prioritization. And if charities aren't a business priority, in my opinion, it's clearly a top-down issue. So beyond the operating model insight that Mark's provided, there's other internal cultural considerations too within banks and non-bank FIs. So you'll find that stigmas exist around the perception of charity sophistication and payment activity. So it's the stick that charities get beaten with often by banks and non-banks alike. So if charities aren't sophisticated enough, or their payments are too risky perhaps, shouldn't there be a responsibility on banks to help those less sophisticated charities, or those that are just starting out that need the most support to enable their growth and sophistication, right? And shouldn't they be taking more steps to enhance payment safely into high-risk jurisdiction banking ecosystems by making them easier and more secure, right? So essentially working closer, you know, the big banks working closer with local banks, but we believe so. But again, the easiest, most cost-effective thing for financial institutions to do is to decline smaller charities for basic financial institution facilities, which in some cases forces them to make bad or desperate decisions when they're trying to move money that will support their critical work. And again, high-risk jurisdiction payments are all too problematic for big banks. They always cite a concern for where the money might end up as a blanket excuse to either half-heartedly support payments there, or, you know, or not at all. But the fact is that high-risk jurisdictions make up a large portion of humanitarian and development funding. You know, destinations, of course they will. You know, that's the nature of this sector. So I guess to answer the original question, I think the relationship between banks and the charity sector isn't improving, as it's too much hassle for the finance sector. And hassle means money, resource, and personnel.
I guess they could kind of be seen as some quite controversial statements, certainly ones that I would believe to be pretty accurate based on the kind of conversations that I've had with charities. But yeah, certainly quite controversial. So what evidence have you got, if any, that you can offer to support it?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I guess I can speak a lot from experience, having operated in this space for 10 years now. So I've seen it firsthand. And let's take the concept of what's being called sanctions and compliance fatigue, which is something that materialized and escalated in international payments probably around 3 years ago. So it was possibly accelerating at the point of the Myanmar coup in February 2021. So since Myanmar, we've had like one humanitarian disaster after another, with Afghanistan, Ukraine, now Gaza, and obviously Yemen's now back in the news. But prior to Myanmar, we also had Syria and Yemen kind of, around about the same time as well, amongst many others, all of which have prompted action from the humanitarian community. So what this has done is driven up the volume of cross-border payment traffic into high-risk jurisdictions exponentially. So we've now reached a point in banking that high-risk payment traffic is at an almost unmanageable level. And this is putting immense pressure on compliance departments at banks and non-bank FIs around the globe. But rather than take on more staff and allocate more investment and take on more sophisticated software to cope with what's being called a new normal, they're taking the decision to reject payments on risk grounds instead. It's the easiest thing to do for them. So, there'll be instances where ISOs will have seen downstream banks hold their payments for weeks, if not months. And this is most likely due to compliance backlog. And these payments will need escalation and review by compliance personnel at multiple levels within one financial institution. So it's like a very human intervention is needed for these payments. And we're seeing more and more rejected payments on the grounds that workload for these teams is becoming overwhelming. But what we're not seeing is increased investment in managing bigger compliance workloads. And why is this? It's been 24 plus months of this, and it doesn't seem to be improving. So I think the answer is simple. Essentially, it's a business cost that doesn't yield any sort of business revenue. It's easier to say no in the name of risk management rather than spend money as a type of risk management investment. And more often than not, you'll find that high-risk payments need a human review and are managed on a case-by-case basis. So people with expertise are needed, with knowledge and a critical thought process, who can look at payments with an understanding of the source, the destination, the remitter, and the beneficiary. But what more and more banks and FIs are moving toward, though, is this, and we've all seen it, is this digitization and automation way of doing things. So completely the opposite direction. And decisioning on high-risk payments is becoming more and more the job of algorithms and software, and less the job of skilled compliance personnel. So, investing in people essentially costs more than investing in software.
So essentially here, what you're saying is that banks and financial institutions prioritize almost every other business type over humanitarian and international development organizations based on revenue generation and resource allocation, I guess. Do you think that there are any exceptions to that rule?
Lauren, that's exactly it. There are a very small number of exceptions. Now, there are some very niche banks that deal in the sector and some very specialist financial institutions that deal in the sector. But again, they only really operate at the top table level. What I mean by that is they're really only servicing the top 1% of INGOs, the super financed, super resourced, government agencies and multilateral organizations. They kind of get this top 1% service that we're speaking about. And beyond that, the frustration is, the rest of the development and humanitarian sector have to make do with finding their own way, non-specialist banks, non-bank financial institutions who, as we mentioned earlier, service them with like a one-size-fits-all solution. And that's what causes the issues. And for us, that is the frustration. We are looking to offer the 1% service to the 99% who can't actually get it at the moment. And that's where we think our growth will come from. Because if you don't do that, as what we've seen when we've spoken to UK charities, is this substandard service, lack of understanding and basic appreciation for the urgency of charity payments, coupled with, like we discussed, the poor technology and the poor product fits. And so what we've seen, and which is probably even more of a cause for concern, is charities can end up onboarding with as many as 6 to 7 different providers. And what they're trying to do is get the best service from that mix. And that kind of becomes completely unmanageable. You know, at the moment, charities are fairly under-resourced. So to try and then expect them to deal with 6 or 7 payment providers is crazy, really. You know, we actually had a conversation with one charity who just asked us, can you actually explain how a payment works? Just the very basic stuff, because nobody in the organization understood how a payment works. You know, how does it literally get from London to Kenya, for argument's sake? You know, and we explained it in detail. And from the explanation, we highlighted issues that were holding up their payments. That comes back to the education. It's not difficult, but the FIs and banks and payment organizations aren't taking the time to develop true partnerships with the charities. And even the core banking provider, which is basically the UK bank, you know, that all that's going to allow them to do is really deal in sterling, basically. The high street bank may have some capabilities to send an overseas payment. But again, with charities, you're working in some fairly difficult and remote areas. So they're forced to go out into the market and find a specialist bank or FI. And normally they will have one or two, because we go back to de-risking. You may have a great relationship with a payment company, and overnight their risk profile changes and they no longer want to service you. So it's a constant juggling of plates. And it comes back to the same thing, that there's not enough specialist providers out there. And again, if you follow through, some charities need a cash solution, some need a mobile wallet solution, some may be looking at going into the digital currency space. So again, that's many applications to many providers, you know, a lot of KYC that needs to be provided, a lot of KYC that needs to be updated every year, you know, a lot of ad hoc compliance requests, you know, and is the everyday charity geared up to support that? And the answer is no, it's not manageable. You know, charities have limited resources and personnel, and they just really need a very reliable, bespoke payment provider that can support their needs.
I mean, it really is, you know, quite a damning assessment from you both. I suppose it's hard to know where to start with regards to resolutions when there seem to be so many problems. How do you possibly work through that amount of issues? You know, you've highlighted a number of those problems today, but I've got no doubt that there are far more that do exist. Ultimately, it comes down to prioritization and education around the massive issues that exist between third sector and the finance sector. So honestly speaking here, what do you think would be a good starting point to have the financial sector address some of these issues?
Yeah, I think, you know, Lauren, this is the start, really. You know, we're having an honest conversation. And I think it is two-way. Like you say, there's that trust and education. And I think what we've covered, you know, so far in the podcast, it's not anything new. You know, these problems have been around for years. But we do feel from the finance side, there could be more of an education. You know, even if you take my example, you know, like I said, I've been based in Africa for nearly 12 years now. And myself and Dan spent a lot of time in the UK in November and December, visited a whole host of charities. I was quite shocked, actually, by how poor the service is and you know, how they're really left to fend for themselves. You know, there are obviously some charities that are very, very happy, but majority have ongoing issues that when you sit there and you work in payments, you think these are quite solvable. You know, these are quite solvable. There's going to be some exceptions to the rule, of course. But traditionally, most of the problems we're hearing about is that they're solvable. And I think that's what really, you know, frustrates us and tries to really, you know, it's going to drive us on to hopefully, you know, build relationships with UK charities so we can support them. So we really think we're at a kind of a, you know, put your money where your mouth is moment, you know, stand up and be counted. But we can't, you know, be doom-mongers either. We can't just sit there and just moan about the problems without really, you know, coming up with a solution that everybody can buy into and actually taking responsibility, you know, for our sector to come to the table and making the first step towards change. So I think what we need, and we're including IPT Africa in this conversation, is more niche FIs to come to the table. FIs that actually do put charities first and at the heart of their operating model. So they really understand their needs, they really understand the complexities, and they provide the education. And they're not always going to have the answers. I think that's the thing we have to make clear as well. We're not always going to have the answers to every single need of every charity, but the vast amount of charities have the same issues and they can be solved. And like we say here at IPT Africa, you know, we want to be one of those niche FIs, but for the wider sector, you know, we have the technology, we have the banking relationships that the top 1% can access. There's no reason why the 99% can't access them as well. So that's what we're looking to do, to build up our operating model around the UK charities' needs. And as we expand, you know, we want to have the full payments toolkit under one roof. So really the charities don't have to go anywhere else and we can provide all the solutions that they need in a one-stop shop offering. And really, you know, we just have to make more of an effort. You know, finance needs to make more of an effort to engage with charities listen to their issues, and try and find solutions. But somebody needs to take the first step.
Yeah, that's a good point, Mark. I think essentially it's cultural exchanges, isn't it? And I think that's going to be crucial to bridging the gap between both sectors. So, you know, more engagement from both sides on a number of different issues. So I think there's a responsibility on banks and non-bank FIs to engage and educate charities. We, you know, we've touched on this already, but it's more on that money movement process. You know, that story that Mark told about a charity that just wanted to know how payments moved. You know, we take that knowledge for granted, and actually, you know, we should be sharing that as part of our education process. Because if we're sharing that information, that's going to help charities to mitigate the risk of payment rejections and holdups, and how to navigate compliance and the know your customer stuff. Yeah, and you know, workshops, seminars, webinars covering this type of detail. So that level of engagement and education, I think, is where we need to be at. And this relationship, it can't be electronic. It needs to be human, you know, between the two sectors. And so finance needs to allocate more human resource to support charities, particularly those working overseas. And, you know, surely this type of approach should align with the whole concept of, you know, and this is something we talk about a lot, but corporate social responsibility, right? So whilst the charity sector might not pose a particularly attractive business prospect, surely there's a duty on banks and FIs who have the infrastructure and the reach and the technologies and the payment rails and all that good stuff to make their offering to INGOs as inclusive as possible. So cultural exchange, but it's clearly a two-way street. I think what we'd like to see, you know, from a finance perspective, is charities do likewise for banks on their own internal processes, like, you know, enhanced due diligence checks on local partners and beneficiaries. So enable our understanding of how charities work. And that just gives this relationship a lot more transparency. And if charities can provide more insight as to how they operate, the challenges they face, and how they go about implementing, like, you know, this is critical, checks and balances in terms of their operations, financial institutions could find so much more comfort and make that collaboration process much more painless. And ultimately, both sides need to be more honest with each other too. And that includes us being honest about what we're looking to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely, Dan. I think you've kind of nailed it again. But I think, you know, we're trying to put ourselves out as two crusading industry insiders, just trying to do some good. But I actually think there's actually more than it. You know, it's a serious issue and there's a lot more to it. We do see a real true partnership opportunity whereby we make charities the priority client. And it's going to be a win for both of us. And as we discussed, right, we look around our industry and we just see a level of service for charities that's so substandard. And we thought, well, if we're doing it in Africa for global NGOs, you know, why can't we do it in the UK for UK charities? And for your listeners, you know, just kind of consider this fact, you know, 68% of UK charities are working in Africa. And if you think the time they spend raising funds for their in-country missions, they could be losing up to 6 to 7% of that from poor exchange rates, delays, time taken for funds to credit, everything we've spoken about. So we want to make the system a lot more efficient. We want to make it extremely user-friendly for charities to get educated and make payments. It should be a very, very painless, seamless process. You know, if we get it right, we're going to solve a number of issues, you know, the ones we've already discussed. But it's a long journey. You know, we're just really starting now. Now, our biggest challenge is in the UK, nobody really has heard of IPT Africa, you know, and it makes us an underdog. You know, but being an underdog is not a bad position to be in. You know, we're moving quickly and we're already seeing traction in the UK market, as you know, NGOs are looking to sitting down with us, understanding what we're doing, and starting to onboard and trying the service. So for your listeners, engage with us. We're here, you know, we'll answer your questions, we'll do free consultations and talk to you about how we can potentially, you know, enhance your current issues. And ultimately, that's going to be good for the charities.
I mean, this is an amazing start, really. I hope that this podcast acts as a little bit of a catalyst for some level of change there. You know, huge amounts of transparency will be required because it's currently a very, very cloudy space, as we know. You know, naturally, a lot of corporate organizations obviously want to protect their business, and a lot of charities want to continue to have relationships with those corporates. So there's a real lack of honesty that currently exists. So just hearing from you both today, it's been extremely refreshing. So thank you. And I do hope that this can go a lot further in terms of helping to make some changes moving forward. There are a lot of charities, as you've said, that are losing out on money. You know, you've highlighted here, and it really is tragic that so many charities working overseas are just losing extortionate amounts of money with regards to exchange rates. And that's just one of the problems that you've highlighted today. So I am really glad that you shared that information with us, and hopefully it can help us to move forward a little bit. If any of our listeners are interested in kind of exploring a bit more about IPT Africa and a bit about the work that you do, you know, I'm sure many of our listeners might not have heard of you before. You mentioned about the possibility of a free consultation potentially. What's the best place to start? Should they visit your website? How's the best way to contact you?
Our website is iptafrica.com. And from there, you know, you can just fill in the request form and we're more than happy to engage with you, you know, on a very confidential one-to-one basis. And we're already doing that and we're already seeing the results.
And of course, we're on LinkedIn as well. So feel free to reach out personally as well as follow our page, which is where we post our monthly content. But yeah, feel free to reach out to Mark and myself on LinkedIn too.
Excellent. That's great. Thank you so much both for joining me today. As I said, it's been really, really refreshing to have this discussion. We honestly don't have this much transparency normally. So it's really great to hear from you both. And yeah, I really appreciate your time. So thank you.
No problem. Thanks for having us on, Laura.
Thanks, Laura.
I really hope this podcast has acted as a catalyst for some change, at least starting some conversations moving forward, which will hopefully help if you've been struggling with any of the issues that we've spoken about today. If you've been affected by any of the issues that we've talked through today and you'd like to discuss them in a little bit more detail, or you'd like to share your experiences with us, please contact editor@charitytimes.com. We'll do our best to help share these experiences through our platform, through opinion pieces, case studies, as much as we can, really, just to kind of shed light on the situation. We can also pass any issues over to Dan and Mark, so we'd love to hear from you. That's all for today. Thank you so much for joining us.